The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on May 27th, 2013. Your host is Elaine B. Holtz.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
And thank you for everybody that attended our 40th birthday party. It was absolutely fabulous. I mean, we had great food, we had great wine. In fact, I want to do a shout out to the family, two families that were so gracious, that donated wine, the Chavez family cellar and the Ulysses Valdez family cellar, cellars. Wonderful, wonderful wine. I couldn't believe it. It kind of just went down your throat like it was almost like ice cream. It was so wonderful. And a special thank you to the musician and all the wonderful people that came together. But particularly, I want to do a huge, huge shout out to our supervisor of the 4th District, Mike McGuire. He just did a fabulous job. Him and his beautiful wife, Erica, showed up, had dinner with us, got up there and raised some money for KBBF. I'm telling you something, it was like watching a fundraising artist when you were watching Mike McGuire. It was just amazing, amazing to him. And then we had some marvelous, marvelous food. I mean, the food was beyond it. It was by the Belly Left Coast Kitchen. Boy, I'll tell you something. And it was just absolutely wonderful. Chef Greg Rowland oversaw the whole thing, and he was just adorable. Thank you, Greg. And also Tres Hombres, the Long Bar and Grill in Petaluma, also provided food. And I want to tell you something, folks, not only was it delicious, but it was actually healthy for you. The vegetables and the salad were just beyond anything that I could have ever hoped for at a fundraiser. And I want to make a special shout out again to Evelina Molina for bringing in all these wonderful, wonderful treats for us, which made it so much fun. I mean, it was really wonderful. So happy birthday, 40th birthday for KBBF, and I am so proud to be a member of the family here. I am so grateful and honored to be able to present to each and every one of you Women's Spaces, which is started, was actually born here in KBBF in 1976, and actually I believe we were one of the first women's shows on the air that actually brought women's music, which was really, really very interesting. Anyway, we have quite a show today. I've got my dear friend Sherry Meisner from the Women's School is going to be talking about women in violence, and also we're going to rerun the interview we had with Eve Ansler last week. For people have been letting me know that they want to hear it again, and so we're going to put it on the air. Evelina made that possible. But, you know, today is Memorial Day, you know, and I've been thinking about Memorial Day all weekend. My husband is on the board of directors for a group called HAVE, HAVE, Helping American Veterans Endure, and we were at their fundraiser on Saturday, and it just hit home once again. You know, what war is like and what our young people are suffering. I mean, I know Evelina and her show today with Dan Kerbin, they did a whole series on veterans and suicide. And, I mean, it's just so sad what we're doing to our young people. And, I mean, I don't know. To me, war seems to be like it's an outdated adventure. But let's just talk a little bit about a Memorial Day. You know, many people confuse Memorial Day and Veterans Day. Actually, Memorial Day is a day for remembering and honoring military personnel who died in the service of their country, particularly those who died in battle. Oh, God, can you believe? I mean, just imagine if you had a son that you knew was overseas that was in a battle, and then all of a sudden you get that telegram. I remember during World War II, remember, I'm 73 years old. My Uncle Nathan was a POW, and we didn't know if he was even going to come back. And I remember the day that he showed up at the door, and my beautiful grandmother Rose, I mean, she just collapsed. She says, "Oh, my son, my son, my son." And my Uncle Nathan, we called him Nooney. I asked him one day, I says, "Uncle Nooney," I says, "tell me, what's war like? You know, what's it like? You know, what happened to you?" He says, "You know, we don't talk about these things, but Elaine, I'm going to tell you one thing. Any man who's been on the battlefield and has experienced what I experienced will not send his son to war. And I want you to promise me that if you ever have a son, you will do anything in your power to make sure he does not go to war." And I think it's because my uncle was on the battlefield. Unfortunately, he did survive, but still the scars and the wounds. So back to what Memorial Day is all about, is particularly those who died in battle or as a result of wounds sustained in battle. I mean, when you see some of the, you know, we're bragging now that we have new equipment that we can replace arms and legs, you know. I mean, come on. I like my arms and my legs. I want to keep them, and I want all you young men out there to keep them also. While those who died are also remembered on Veterans Day, Veterans Day is the day set aside to thank and honor all those who served honorably in the military in war or peacetime. So Memorial Day is a memorial, you know, to honor the dead, you know, and to honor the sacrifice that not only they made for giving their lives, but also the sacrifice that their family made, the wives and the mothers and the fathers and the sisters and the brothers and the cousins and the nieces and everybody else who suffers because of war. And it was actually not until after World War I, however, that day was expanded to honor those who have died in all American wars. In all American, how many have we had? I mean, you think millions and millions of people die for war. Why can't we live for peace? Why are we dying for war? We should live for peace. Oh, it's crazy. You know, you ever hear the old saying, all wars are fought in the name of peace? I mean, I don't understand that logic. Do you, Evelina? No, she's shaking her head. Well, anyway, in 1971, Memorial Day was declared a national holiday by an act of Congress. Oh, I'm glad they could do something. So it is still often called Decoration Day. It was also placed, it also happens on the last Monday in May, and it's considered a federal holiday. So today all the banks will be closed and all this stuff, but we're here at KBBF. Well, you know, most of my viewers and listeners know that I am not in favor of war at all. Call me what you want. I call myself a humanist. I'm not a communist or a socialist or a Democrat or a Republican. I consider myself a humanist. I believe in the human quality of life, that we should learn how to live in peace and how to come together. And you know, one of the best songs, I think, that describes war or gives the actual background of war is a song written by Bob Dylan. It's called The Masters of War, which we're going to play. And I found a wonderful, wonderful kind of a piece on it by a woman by the name of Tatiana, T-A-T-I-A-N-A, Moroz. And she just does an absolutely fabulous job on this horrific song. And I want you to just pay attention to the lyrics. I mean, we're not going to play the whole song, but it's very, very interesting. And one of the things that Dylan talks about, one of the things he says, "How much do I know to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's one thing I know, though I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do." And I love that line, because we call ourselves a Christian nation. We say one nation under God. And what are we doing? You know, Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." And what are we doing? We're at war, one after the other. Well, anyway, let's listen to Masters of War by Tatiana Moraz.
Come, you masters of war, you that build all the gods, you that build the death plains, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind desks. I just want you to know I can see through your mask. You that never done nothing but to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in his hand and you hide from his eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old. But I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. Then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion as young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can never be heard. Fear to bring children into the world. For threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young, you might say I'm unlearned, but there's one thing I know, though I'm younger than you, that even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? And I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I will follow your casket on a pale afternoon, and I'll watch while you're lowered down into your deathbed, and I'll stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
Oh my goodness gracious. I mean, that is more powerful than even listening to Bob Dylan sing. It's something about a woman. When we get into it, we are the ones who bring forward the future, for goodness sakes. You know, no more sons, no more daughters going to war to kill another mother, son, and daughter. Let's stop, for heaven's sakes. Well, let's talk about a little good news. I mean, that song is so heavy, it's just amazing to me. I could see Evelina sitting in front of me with her eyes closed. It's just amazing. Well, listen, before we bring Sharon Mazur on from the Women's School, and we're going to talk about women in violence, and she's going to give us a little background maybe on what it is that what it is inside of us that creates this awful thing called war and violence. But I want to do a special shout out to what happened on Saturday. It was also very, very special. There was a special march. In fact, what I found out is that the local organizer here was by the name of Karen Hudson, and the group is, they were
marching in Santa Rosa. It was a rally in Santa Rosa to protest Monsanto, genetically modified food. And when I found out, actually, I believe it was France. Was it France that just actually burned all their modified food, genetically modified food, and said no more? Pardon? Oh, it was Hungary. Oh, my goodness. They burned it all down. They said, no more of this. And organizers said that the March Against Monsanto protests were held in 52 countries and 436 cities across the United States. The March Against Monsanto protesters said they wanted to call attention to the dangers posed by genetically modified food and the food giants that produce it. And, you know, ladies, if you have children out there, you know, my feeling is, if there's even a small doubt that something might hurt them, I think it's very, very important that we start looking at the food that we put into our bodies. And, you know, I went into a local supermarket and they were selling corn. And I said, is that corn genetically modified food? And they couldn't even answer me. I said, look on the box, nothing. We need to have our food labeled. We need to know what we're putting into our bodies, because, you know, our body is sacred. And we are what we eat. And when you're looking at women with cancer, 1 in 3 now, that's horrible. I mean, when I was growing up, you hardly ever heard of anybody dying from cancer. Now, 1 in 3, well, I believe our food has something to do with it. So we need to really support these protesters who are standing up for all of us. You know, when a person goes out in the street, they take a lot of chances of being arrested, of being harassed, all kinds of things go on, but they're standing up for us. You know, and we need to respect that. We need to support that. We need to think about that. And we need to ask ourselves the question, why? Why would anybody be against labeling? What is the issue here? So keep your eyes open, and a special shout out to everybody in Santa Rosa who attended the protest. I understand we had over 1,000 people. 1,000 people came out in the streets. That shows how concerned we are. So thank all of you for taking a stand for all of us, for the children, for the future. We need real food, not genetically modified food. Well, that's a lot to think about, a lot to chew on, but that's the whole thing about women's spaces, is to get everybody off their duffs, doing something for peace, and thinking about what really can each and every one of us to do, and hopefully gain the confidence and the courage to stand up and be counted, to stand up and not be afraid, not to be afraid to protect our Mother Earth, to protect our food supply. Well, without further ado, I have a wonderful, wonderful guest with me. And as you know, this is going to be a regular. Sharon Maser from the Women's School is going to be here on Women's Spaces the last Monday of the month. And we're just going to have little discussions back and forth. And she's just a brilliant, brilliant woman. She's trying to start this wonderful school here in Sebastopol, just geared towards women and empowering us. That's the most important thing, to empower women to be able to stand up. Well, Sharon, welcome. Welcome once again to Women's Spaces.
Oh, hi, Elaine. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, I understand that you are on vacation with your dear friend Chacha, and you just had a little experience. You end up getting caught in the snow and sleeping. What happened? Tell our listeners.
Well, we're on a very small back road going up in Northern California. I really wanted to explore this area. I've never been up here, and I had a sense it would be very beautiful and quiet, peaceful. So we came up just south of Shasta and headed east, and then headed north up towards the lava beds and Truly Lake, and it was truly very beautiful. But we got about 30 miles in, and snow was on the road, and there were tracks through it, and we thought we could get through on the tracks, and we couldn't. We got what they call high-centered. We got snow stuck in the middle of our car, so one tire wasn't going around. And it was about an hour and a half or 2 hours before dark. So we had only seen 4 cars come and coming out on our road, nobody going the same way we were. So there we were, fortunately well prepared with food and water and sleeping bags and warmth and matches. And, you know, we tried to dig ourselves out. We had a little shovel. And that was hard. We weren't really able to do that. And then we just spent the night there, and someone came in the morning that was trying to go to a lake. We were 3 miles from a fishing lake. And they couldn't pull us out, but they went back and called a tow truck to the town that was 30 miles away. But right before that, we had loaded our packs and gotten all dressed up. We were going to walk out. And it's a good thing we didn't try that, because 30 miles forward...
Oh, my God.
And 30 miles back, we, you know, Chacha had a hip injury, and my foot was hurting. We could never have made it.
Well, you know, Sharon, you really had an adventure. And, you know, to help add to the adventure here on radio, we need you to come a little closer to your phone and talk.
Can you hear me now? This is pretty much as loud as I can do.
Yeah, that's a lot better. Well,
okay.
Listen, congratulations, and I'm glad you didn't take that 30-mile trip. And I send a shout-out to you. You know, you're such a strong woman, and here's another example of it. And my love goes out, and a shout out to Chacha also. I know she was there with her positive, wonderful attitude, and just with her smile, I know it made it a lot easier.
Oh, indeed, she was. You know, and she had to stop right in the beginning and do a prayer. You know, it was like connection for us to the goddess, and asking for help and asking for guidance. And that was a really good thing, you know, and I felt like we were blessed. People did come to help us, and the night was beautiful. It was cloudy, but there was a full moon. There was something about having that full moon that was very reassuring.
Well, I'm glad you made it. I'm glad you made it, and I am so grateful that you're able to be on this show, and so honored to call you friend. Let's talk a little bit about our topic. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about women and violence. And one of the things that you brought up when we were talking on the phone is that what you wanted to talk about was some of the stuff underlying what creates violence, and what happens to people when they become in that state of mind. So why don't you open it up by anything that you feel is important to share with our listeners?
Okay. In a way, it's sort of related to my experience being out here and the full moon that keeps speaking to me, because I think when I think of what kind of mind commits the violence and abuse to women, what kind of mind is irresponsible about the chemicals and the destruction of the planet and all the things that we do. Last night I heard something about the effects of sonar sounds on whales, how sonar kills whales. And you know, what is it, the mind that can, what kind of mind causes that kind of damage? And I think that at the root, and this again is, you know, I speak to women, to us as women, to gather our strength as women, for we are people on the planet, but we're also women on the planet. And I think there's a big difference between women and men in our experience of affirming life, of understanding the value of life, the mystery of life, the preciousness of life. You know, we have children, we bear children. You can still die from childbirth. There's still mystery and magic, and there's still no explaining and no ability to reproduce a child. And we understand the preciousness of that. We understand what it is to cherish. And I think the root of men's inability to do that is they've gotten far away from understanding that mystery and that magic and the respect for it, the respect, the honoring, and the valuing of it. So I think for us, you know, we understand that it not to waste it. We don't waste a life. Even a life where a child is, say, deformed, say we use that word, even though it's just different, we still love that life that we've created.
It's interesting that you say that, because across the street from me, where I live in my home, there's a young boy who is disabled, and normally speaking, they might put him in an institution. And the family, the mother says, "Oh no, no, my son, I love him no matter what." So your kind of hypothesis is that men have lost touch, particularly the ones who create the violence or who are, you know, sitting behind the desk and making all these different orders about this genetically modified food. You're saying that they have lost touch with the mystery of life and the preciousness of it.
I do, and I think that's very old. You know, and I think the way I think because of my personal experience at healing and because of the education I have, and part of it is in biology, part of it is in anthropology, with a little philosophy and a lot of spiritual training. And I know that in the time of Plato, Platonic thinking valued objects over process, over relationship, over growth, over change. There were other philosophers, but Platonic theory dominated. And once you start thinking that objects are the most important, and you start talking about purity and a pure, beautiful table over individual tables, real tables, you start thinking, you know, a coldness happens, and a calculation, and oh, you start looking at things as objects. You can manipulate objects, you can control objects, you can cut them in pieces, you can put them in different places, you can open them and examine them. You can do things that remove you from the sacredness of life. And without that sense of sacredness, there's no orientation, there's no rudder, there's no true goodness or true wholeness to hold ourselves to.
So you're saying that it's when we become indifferent, when we become indifferent to the mystery.
Yeah.
And we don't see ourselves, and also we don't see ourselves as part of the mystery, which is very, very interesting.
Right. Well, not at all. We start to see ourselves in terms of ego, self-aggrandissement, you know, self, how much money we can have, how much power, what we can do on the earth. It's competitive. It's all totally, it's selfish. It becomes very selfish.
Well, you know,
what can become, if the sacredness is not important of life, what then is going to substitute for that? Well, it must be me and what I can do in the world. So this, you know, and I think it's interesting because Buddhism has really taken off in America, and Buddhism teaches two things that are very feminine: meditation, which is to go inward, to look at your inner experience, which we are good at as women, and compassion, to be compassionate for other beings. A very feminine. Buddhism, I think, is so, we're like sponging for it in this country because it really helps connect us to our feminine. But there's something more, there's something even under that, because when you're compassionate, you're still going along with something that is. But when you go back to your sacredness, then you disallow, you say, no, that can't happen. Like you were talking about the GMOs, that was so exciting to hear you say that. I didn't know that had happened about the 52 countries and 1,000 people in Santa Rosa. It was like, hooray, you know, because that's going back to the sacredness of life as it is, of food as natural in the way it was given to us.
Well, Sharon, I want us to hold that thought. Because today we're having a special program. We're going to have to preempt you a little bit because we only have so much time, and we're going to be doing we're going to be running the Eve Ansler. So why don't you hold that thought? And I would like to have you come back maybe next Monday when you're here in town, and we can continue this conversation because I think it's very, very important. Are you open to that?
Sure. My calendar when I get home.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, we will talk, and I'm really sorry that I have to cut you off like this, but I have to introduce Eve Ansler now, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart and give my love to Cha-Cha, and we will be talking again soon, and I'm really sorry I have to cut you short.
That's okay, but listen to Eve when she talks about her body and the tree. It's beautiful, about restoring her connection to the earth. That's so important. So I hope your listeners enjoy Eve. I did. It was wonderful, and thank you for having her. And I love you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Sharon Messner from the Women's School. You can look her up on the Women's School on her website. And, you know, last week, Evelina and I shared our program. In fact, we called it Sharing Spaces, which is really wonderful. I just love Evelina. Can I tell you that, Evelina? You're just a bright star in this world. Last week, we shared our programs in order to do an interview with Eve Ansler, who was the creator of the Vagina Monologues and an activist, to both bring awareness about violence that is happening against women globally, along with helping to bring an end to the violence. She will be talking about her new book, In the Body of the World, which I would recommend to read. Eve Ansler is an internationally best-selling author and award-winning playwright whose works include The Vagina Monologues, The Good Body, Insecure at Last, and I Am an Emotional Creature. She is also the founder of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women and girls, which has raised more than $90 million for local groups and activists and inspired the global action 1 billion rising. Eve is also Newsweek's one of the 150 women who changed the world. And here's the interview that we did with her last Monday.
My
Eve
name is
Elaine
B. Holt, and I'm host of a program called Women's Spaces here at KBBF. You know, the beautiful, beautiful mountain, you know, from the mountain here at Santa Rosa, California. And today I have a great guest with me today, a woman by the name of Eve Ansler. And before we talk to Eve, I want to tell you a little bit about her. Eve Ansler is an internationally best-selling author and an award-winning playwright whose work includes The Vagina Monologues, The Good Body, Insecure at Last, and I Am an Emotional Creature. I love that because I'm an emotional creature myself. She is also the founder of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women and girls, and I am proud to announce that in 2002, I was part of that group that put on what is known as the Vagina Monologues in Petaluma, which was so exciting to even be able to talk about being a woman, talk about the vagina, and talk about all the interesting things that surround just being a woman, period. She, like I said, she's the founder of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women and girls, which has raised more than $90 million for local groups and activists and inspired the global action 1 million rising. And as many of you know, here at KBBF, we had so much coverage on the 1 billion rising, and also Women's Spaces did a live show. And on the next Women's Spaces, we're going to have a woman by the name of Potenza, who actually designed a heart for the occasion. And another thing that is so wonderful about Eve, she is also considered one of the 150 women by Newsweek who changed the world. And on April 26th, Eve Ansler began a 19-city tour starting in New Mexico and finishing in Miami, Florida. She will also be appearing in our area at the Dominican College down the street in San Rafael. I'll talk about her new book, In the Body of the World. Welcome. Welcome, Eve. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Good morning. It's such a beautiful morning.
Oh, it definitely is. And it's so exciting to have you. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for blessing Sonoma County and KBBF for allowing this interview to happen. You know, I introduced you, and I was wondering, is there anything else that you'd like to add? I mean, it's just the idea that you are considered one of the 150 women of the world who changed the world. It's just amazing to me.
Oh, I just think the most important thing is to be alive. That's what I'm happy about.
Well, you know, talking about being alive, you know, I read your book. I read it when Melanie from Holt Publication contacted me, and we talked to each other. She says one of the requirements you had was that whoever interviews you read the book. And so I thought, oh my goodness, I got to read this book and I got to find time for it. Anyway, I sat down and I read the book from cover to cover, and I want you to know that I was totally inspired, and it was just extraordinarily open and extraordinarily honest, and my hat goes off to you for writing such a great work. But before we get into the book, let's talk a little bit about the Vagina Monologues. I mean, I had no idea that you won a Tony Award for that.
Well, I didn't win it for the Vagina Monologues. I actually won it later. And the Tony Award was the Isabel Stevenson Award for humanitarian good that one has done in the theater community. So I won an Obie for them, Vagina Monologues.
Oh, well, congratulations. I mean, just reading your history was amazing. Well, can you give us a little background? You know, what inspired you? I mean, that was such a big step for a woman to take, you know, to even discuss the vagina. I mean, you put that word on the map. So can you give us a little idea of what inspired you and what was your motivation behind it?
I think it was just curiosity. You know, I was talking to a woman about menopause, and we got onto the subject of her vagina, and she just said these terrible things about her vagina that was finished and dead and dried up, and I was shocked. And I after talking to her, I realized that I didn't know what other women thought, so I just started casually saying to friends, well, what do you think of your vagina? And that was the beginning, and then everything that every woman said was so either surprising or funny or weird or bizarre or sad. I just started taking notes, but I didn't even know why I was taking notes. It just was interesting. And then I interviewed a woman who, an older woman, I talked to an older woman who had a very humiliating experience when she was a young woman and she had never had sex again. And I was in shock. And that's when I really began to say, wait, there's something here.
Oh, what, you know, this older woman you're talking about, you know, I was in the Vagina Monologues in 2002 in Petaluma. Was that the flood that you were talking about?
Yes, that was the flood.
Right.
Yes.
I remember reading it, and when I read it after it was over, I just start crying. It was so touching. So what in, and then, so you wrote the book, and rather you wrote the play, and then what happened after that?
Well, once I started to perform the play in a little theater way downtown, everything just happened. It was, you know, I've been a playwright for a long time. I've been writing plays about homeless women and nuclear war and all kinds of subjects that were not commercial fare. But there was something about the vagina and talking about vaginas that just immediately took off. And the next thing I know, I was touring around the world doing it. And then as I toured and I listened to the stories of women, I began to hear, and what the play did, it would provoke more and more women to tell me their stories. And most women were telling me stories that involved violence in one way or another. You know, being beaten, being raped, being incested, being humiliated. And it was really overwhelming. So in 98, I got a group of women together and I said, well, how could we use this play to end violence against women and girls? And we started D-Day, the global movement to end violence. And we did one performance in New York City with fabulous actors from Whoopi Goldberg to Susan Sarandon to Lily Tomlin to Glenn Close. And we thought that was going to be it, you know? And it just launched, you know, we were going to raise money for local groups and we were going to bring attention. And that night just rocked the city. And we knew we were onto something much bigger. And that was 15 years ago. And that was the beginning of this movement, which is now, through 1 Billion Rising, is now spread to 207 countries, and the play's been done in 140 countries, and we've raised actually $100 million to end violence against women and girls, and, you know, and it's growing, and it's growing and growing, so it's definitely the little vagina that could.
It's so interesting, too, that when we put the performance on in Petaluma, and the woman, Julia Schneider, got us all together, we suddenly realized that not only were we putting on a play, but we're also going to help raise money for a local nonprofit, which was part of the requirement. And that was such a brilliant idea to have groups putting on the play and also supporting local local groups. How did you come up with that idea? I mean, that is so inspiring.
Well, I've been an activist most of my life, and I thought to myself, either I can keep this play as a purely commercial venture, or I can allow groups, you know, and support the groups on the ground who are doing the crucial work of ending violence against women every day, who are always hard-pressed for funds and resources. And the play can become a tool that supports that women's movement. And it just felt like such a better thing to do, you know. And, you know, it really has worked. It really has become self-empowerment philanthropy. And I think a lot of young women in colleges I think V-Day's been at 900 colleges. A lot of women in colleges and community groups. It's the first time they ever do any activist activity. And it's a doorway for them. They really become activists or social workers or mayoral candidates or leaders as a result of it, which I find very exciting.
No, I mean, that is absolutely wonderful. You know, we're curious, do you have is the Vagina Monologues in any different languages? Like, do you have a play in Spanish or any other languages?
Yes, it's been translated into 49 languages.
Oh, that is amazing. Well, you know...
Yeah, and it's been done just about everywhere. I mean, only a few countries haven't done it.
Well, congratulations. I mean, you brought a great body of work, and I can't tell you
how much
I appreciate it. It's just amazing. Well, let's start talking about this wonderful, wonderful tour that you're taking. My goodness, and after reading your book, I'll tell you, the book is, I have to say, is extraordinarily, and I have to emphasize, extraordinarily honest and open, and really gives a vivid picture of actually what you went through as a woman, you know, fighting cancer, and just finding out what was happening with you was just amazing. And here you are traveling 19 cities. I mean, after reading the book, and I was thinking, where does this woman get her energy and her tenacity? I'm going to take a little break here. I want to identify the station. You're listening to KBBF 89.1. And we're right in the middle of an interview with Eve Ansler that we did last week. And is that going to be cleared up in a minute, Evelina? Pardon? Okay, hopefully we can get this cleared up. And unfortunately, you know, that's the problem with technology, you know that. You know, and fortunately we have such a good engineer like Evelina who picks up on the problems right away. And we're in the background, we're playing a song called The Earth Song. And I want to read a quick little poem. As one we walk this earth together, as one we sing to her our song, as one we love her, as one we heal her, her heart beats with our own as one. Interesting when you're looking at the song, when they talk about as one we join with our mother, as one we feel her sacred song, as one we touch her, as one we heal her. You know, that's what the whole march was about, you know, against Monsanto's, you know, looking at the earth and looking at how what our food supply is like. And just to remind you that right now we did have some technical difficulty with the Eve Ansler interview, but we're working on it very diligently. And so here I am with some space to be able to talk to people and to be able to express some of my concerns. You know, I was really shocked when California, that Proposition 37 was defeated. But then there is some rumor that maybe it, you know, maybe it wasn't time and that we needed to make a better proclamation. And that's what they're doing now. The next step is to get the, you know, to get the food labeled, you know. And my question has always been, is that what is the big deal about labeling food? I mean, when you start thinking about it, you know, you start thinking about how important it is that we know what we put into our bodies. And so we need to start thinking about that. You know, we need to start thinking about that a lot. In fact, when I was reading Eve Ansler's book in the Body of the World, one of the things she talks about is food. You know, she talks about how important it is to take care of your body. As women, oftentimes we are the caretakers and we take care of everybody else but ourselves. And it's really, really important that we do take care of ourselves. And you know, our food, it's just stunning to me that we have to go through all this just to get what is rightfully ours as human beings. And you know, when you talk about genetically modified food, what they really are is genetically modified plants that are grown from seeds engineered to resist pesticides, you know, and herbicides, and add nutritional benefits to otherwise improve crop yields and increase the global food supply. And right now, most corn, soybean, and cotton crops grown in the United States have actually been genetically modified. But some say genetically modified organisms can lead to serious health conditions and harm the environment. And you know, there's a debate going on. And my feeling is, until you know for certain, until you know for sure, yes, this food source is safe, then put it on the market. But not until we find out that it's absolutely safe. You know, it's very, very important to do that. It really is. And there's a lot to think about. There's a lot to think about. And the most important thing that we need to think about is the future of our children and the future of our planet. You know, it's the same thing with war. You know, here we are celebrating Memorial Day. We're celebrating the death of so many young people that it's heartbreaking to me. I mean, can you imagine a day to celebrate the death of young men and young women who sacrificed their life, and we still don't have peace? I mean, what is stopping us from having peace? You know, and what's so interesting, too, about Bob Dylan's song, I'm going to go back to it. I mean, there's a lot, you know, I'm trying to fill in a little bit of space here, and it's very interesting. It's kind of interesting to start thinking about these things. You know, one of the lines one of the stanzas in his song is you fasten the triggers for others to fire, then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion as young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. Well, you know, you could say the same thing about genetically modified foods. You know, you have a group of people who are creating this and they're sitting back and maybe watching and not really caring, you know, what happens to our young people, what happens to the future. And then another line he has, let me ask you one question, is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you'll find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And to me, what's so riveting about that stanza is, well, all the money you made, will it buy back your soul? I mean, we talk about suicide with young people who have come back from these horrendous wars that were engaged in with Iraq and Afghanistan. And the reason that I believe that these young people are killing themselves is because they suddenly sit back and realize what they have done, what they've been ordered to do. And in the name of money, in the name of oil, in the name of territory, I mean, is it really worth it when you think about it, what it's doing to our young people, how damaging it is? I mean, it's really, really very sad. And I personally take it very personal. You know, I don't want to see any son go to war. So let's get an update here from Evelina. How are we doing, Evelina? I think we're just about ready to go back into the Eve Ansler interview, and I hope some of the dialogue that I had while we were waiting that was of interest to you. So are we ready to get back? So we are ready to get back to Eve Ansler, and she's talking about her book called The Body of the World, In the Body of the World.
As one we sing to her our song, as one we love her, as one we heed her, her heart beats with our own as one. As one we join with her our mother, as one we feel her sacred song, as one we touch her, as one we heal her, her heart beats with our own as one.
Well, you know, we've had some terrible, terrible engineering difficulty here, and what we decided to do is that we're going to run the interview next week. So not to worry. I know there are many, many people out there. We announced it on Facebook today, and you know, we live. Hey, Daniel, how many of you knows did I just say? But we live in a world of technology, and technology things happen. You know, things happen, and I don't want Evelina to be stressed anymore. Evelina, we don't even have time to finish. And that, you know, you're listening to KBBF. We are your local community bilingual radio station, the first one in the United States, and this is a live show. And when you have live shows, let me tell you something, be ready for anything, anything. I also like to bring your attention to something very important, and that is, talk a little bit about women's spaces. You know, I normally don't discuss it that much, but I want to give you a little background on how I started it and what some of my goals are. About 1977, I received my master's degree in education. I was very proud of it. Why was I proud of it? It was from San Francisco State. Why was I proud of it? Because when I graduated high school, I was voted least likely to succeed. And also, on my kindergarten report card, there was a little saying that said, Elaine should understand that children should be seen and not heard. As you can tell, I really didn't listen to that. But anyway, in 1976 or 1977, we're not absolutely sure of the dates. I was working at a place called Athena House, which is a program is alternative to incarceration for women. And a young man came in and said, hey, anybody here do radio? And I'm looking around the room and nobody raised their hand. So I raised my hand and I says, well, you know, I don't know if this is considered radio, but I used to read the sports announcements and also the weather report at Los Angeles City College. Does that constitute radio? And he said, well, were you in front of a mic? And I go, well, yeah. He said, oh, you were on the radio, and brought me down to KBBF. And I was blessed to meet a wonderful, wonderful human being by the name of Richard Berry, who offered to be my engineer, because I looked at all the equipment and I said, no way am I going to touch this. When I was at Athena House, I had this relationship with a copy machine that every time I went by it, it would break down. So they had a big sign on it saying, Elaine is not allowed here. I mean, talk about embarrassment. And so I told Richard, no, I can't touch any of the equipment. And he said, fine, I'll be your engineer. And then I thought, well, what the heck am, what kind of show am I going to have? So I called up my friend Constance Stanclift, who has since made her transition from the world, a wonderful, wonderful woman, a great, great friend of mine, was a huge loss when she passed away. But I called her. I said, Connie, I got this opportunity to be on the radio. You know, what should I do? You know, and we start talking, and we start talking about, you know, women's music and stuff. And she says, you know, you need a space for women, for women's music. And I go, oh, women's spaces. That's it. So that's how Women's Spaces was born. And I was on the air for about 4 years. And then, of course, you know, as life takes on, I was a single parent at the time, and I had to raise my beautiful daughter, Susan, and so I didn't have time for radio. I didn't have time for anything but work and to make sure that she was raised. Well, in the year of 2002, I retired and started thinking about, well, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And then in 2005... my God, that's almost 10 years already. I decided I was going to take Women's Spaces on television. And so I went down to the Community Media Center of the North Bay and took their classes and learned how to do a program called the Live Link. And folks, I want you to know something. I'm 73 years old. At the time, I was about 65. And when I saw myself on television, I said, oh no, I can't do this. I'm not 16 anymore. I'm not 18 anymore. I'm not 25. I'm an old woman. And how can I go on stage? How can I go on camera? And my dear husband, Kenneth Norton, said to me, you know, Elaine, if you come from your heart, you come from your heart, you look beautiful. Not to worry about it. So I thought, oh God, yeah, Ken, come from your heart and you're going to be beautiful, right? I says, no way, you know. In fact, I had just written a poem called I'm More Than My Hair. I'm here to declare I'm more than my hair. And I looked at my hair when I saw myself that first time and I said, oh my God, I got to get it cut. Well, that was almost 10 years ago now. That's I'm almost on my 300th show. And I want to tell my women listeners out there, the most important thing that happened is that I look at myself every week. I've gotten better looking, and I've gotten younger looking. So my suggestion is don't be afraid to do something different. You know, well, that's the story about Women's Spaces, and we are coming to the end of our show. I'm so sorry about that Eve Ensler interview, but we will take care of it next week. And that's the beauty. We have it recorded. We have an archive of it. So not to worry, and I apologize for that. And I just didn't want Evelina to go through any more stress. We need to go on, you know, with life. Anyway, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host and the producer, Elaine B. Holt. Wow, that was a slip. I was Elaine B. Pine when I first went on the air. I call myself Elaine B. to remind myself to be here now, that I'm doing the best I can, and that I'm a beautiful child of the world, and I'm also a beekeeper. And so that's what the Elaine B. Holt is all about. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening and watching Women's Spaces. Remember to go to www.womenspaces.com. You can hear the Eve Ensler interview online also if you missed it today. And hey, listen, guys, if all goes well and our health stays in place, we will be with you next Monday at 11 to 12 noon on 89.1 KBBF, your bilingual radio station here in Sonoma County. You all take care, and we will be with you next week.
So easily, she does everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on May 27, 2013. Your host is Elaine B. Holtz.